Blog Talk Radio.
You know, every time I speak, I want the truth to come out. You know what I'm saying? Every time I speak, be like, they know what I'm going to say because it's polite. They know what I'm going to say. And even if I get in trouble, you know what I'm saying? That ain't that what we're supposed to do? I'm not saying I'm going to rule the world or I'm going to change the world, but I guarantee that I will spark the brain that will change the world.
Got to have personal responsibility, political accountability, and corporate culpability.
Get up, 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 get up.
We must eliminate poverty. I don't care what color the person, a child.
Pessimists see a glass half empty, but our optimists see a glass half full. Are we locked into regressive mentality by change unseen? If you try to fail and then succeed, which have you done? Do you ask enough questions or do you settle for what you know? The only questions that really matter are the ones you ask yourself. Welcome to Mental Dialogue. All I ask is that you think.
I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, and welcome to this Mental Dialogue pop-up show as we are the return of intelligent radio, as we ensure the free flow of opinions and push the envelope on the questions America's afraid to ask in the mainstream media. Again, this is a pop-up show. For those that know, we are regular every Saturday morning, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, every Saturday morning. I am fortunate enough to be bringing back one of the people I consider one of the smart people, as we have the Smart People series every third Saturday. But I'm bringing on my brother, my friend, brother Brant House, who's returning to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. Thank you for being with me this evening, King. If you will, say hello to any of the troops
that may
be tuned in, as well as to any of the new listeners that may be tuning in just to hear what you got to say tonight. But thanks again for being with us, Brant House. Again, say hello and speak to the truth seekers. And give us go ahead and give a little bit of your background, because we've got a short time this evening. So we're
okay,
gonna keep it
moving. Yeah, I'm sure I brought in at least one new listener, and hopefully they'll spread the word about the show, because every time we get a new one on, they get locked in, man, and spend their Saturdays with you like I like to do. So I appreciate the pop-up episode for us today to talk about something that I'm really passionate about, education. I'm currently on the school board in District 203 in O'Fallon, Illinois, just outside of St. Louis, and running for re-election. We did this four years ago this time when I was running for election the first time.
Uh-huh.
And we were successful with your help and the support of some of the listeners in this area. So, I appreciate anybody that's listening in your hemisphere, man, just looking for knowledge, and just I wanted to be able to talk about some of the experiences I had over the last four years and what I'm looking forward to over the next 4 years, because it's been a great experience. A lot of things learned on, I think, from every perspective of our board. So, man, thanks for the time, and I appreciate the pop-up show.
Nah, absolutely, man. Glad to have you back. As you said, we were fortunate enough. Here's the beauty of this. So a few years back when we did this for the first time and had you on and said, hey, let's talk about your election bid. Of course, as you said, this time is the re-election bid. Well, I don't know if you remember this, but we were actually just getting started as a show. Like, we had literally just started. I don't even know if we had did our first actual episode. We were kind of just preparing. And I said, hey, Brant, let's try this, man. Just as an opportunity to let people get to know you, because I know you very well. So come full circle, here we are some years later. Hey, we still doing our thing every Saturday. And again, thank you for sharing what we're doing every Saturday to people in your area. But let's do a little give back. And this just to share with people why this matters to me, and it mattered back then. Obviously, you are super passionate about education, and as I promoted the show, I said for anybody that wants to intercede, see how education and politics coincides to a certain extent. I think it's an opportunity to learn because, for the most part, people don't quite know how they go hand in hand. And again, that's not all we're doing tonight, but I think at the end of the day, in a sense, like you say, you're running for a position to be on the school board, and, you know, to a certain extent, that becomes political. And, you know, there's that saying that politics is local. Well, the reality is, as a community, as a country, we typically get caught up in national things, but it's at the local level. You know, as I call the trenches, where things really happen, and where sometimes people can get kind of bitter to what's happening nationally. Sometimes it sours them to what's happening, you know, right in their area. And, you know, the reality is you don't see the turnout for local that you see for national. And in reality, if we understood the politics, that should be flipped, you know, if we were going to be very honest about it. So, yeah, go ahead.
Really, you're exactly right. You're exactly right. And I looked up the numbers a couple of years ago. And for our local turnout, if it's a, like, this is a off-presidential year mm-hmm. election. We have some November elections, and then this one is obviously April 2nd. For these kinds of elections, we're good to get 18% turnout for a wow. So that's St. Clair County where I'm
a non-presidential year. Absolutely.
Right, and for a presidential year, we might get a quarter of a turnout. So that's significant, man. And you think if you can drum up the turnout, you can definitely change the tide in any kind of election. But it also says, hey, a small number of people are deciding on what's going on in your community. And if you're not taking part in that, then you miss an opportunity to have your say in how things go in your community.
Yeah, and based on – and with those numbers, just to say this real quickly, and we'll dig kind of into your story, but – To say this very quickly, like you say, with that small number, what ends up happening is
right.
you can have such a big influence if just a group of you said we want to because of those
yeah.
kind of low turnout. So you can really have large influence where it actually matters. Again, as a society, we kind of have this flipped and backwards as far as where our focus lies. So, you know, those are actually abysmal numbers if you just want to be very candid about it. Again,
yeah.
you know, again, I don't miss an election, and so I'm always going to be in that 18%. I'm here in the Atlanta area,
right.
but I don't miss an election or whatever. And there's a lot, you know, there's other people that feel the way I do as well. To a certain extent. But at the same time, I'll be, you know, very honest that I try to keep up with local, but again, we get busy in our lives and we don't always do it, and I'm not always, you know, the best at it as well. But here's an opportunity. Here's a friend of mine that's playing a role in all things of education, and that's where I kind of want to go. You know, let's peel back a little bit of your story. We did this a few years ago, and I don't want to go fully, you know, to the exact place that we
yeah.
went, you know, last year. But I'm going to tell you how I look at you, because this is the beauty of social media. We're able to kind of watch each other's lives, right? I want to share this with you and let you peel this back. So quite often society says education is important. You know, Malcolm X has the famous quote, education is the passport to the future. So we understand there's an importance, and we put up a lot of money for our children when it comes to education. So this is something that society understands. But I'll say for you, it's a different level. And a different level is that you actually wanted to become a public servant in addition to saying that education is important. But I'll tell you why I think that is so important, why it became so important for you in my own observation, and you can tell me. But, you know, you and I were both fortunate enough to go to the U.S. Air Force Academy together. You know, not the easiest school to get into. It definitely has its difficulties. But I will say your path was one of the most unique paths to get into that school. And when we compare, in a sense, each other's situation, you know, you and I had to go to the prep school. Neither one of us could get directly in, you know, as we may have wished. So we had to go an extra year to kind of prepare for the academy. We both went through that same experience. But if we looked around and kind of looked at each other's experience, a lot of people were, you know, athletes still need to get to getting their, you know, the SATs up. I was definitely one of the SAT people or whatever. Your situation was you had went enlisted, you know, and they have a rare group that they allow to come in that way. But I'll say, to be honest, Brent, your high school record is not one that typically anybody at the academy would have, if, you know, we want to be very honest about it. So what I'll say, and I'll let you jump in, is education, by the time you decided to take it serious, was once you got in the Air Force and started going to college classes, you took it so serious that when that the difference in your life is quite fathomable. You know what I mean? Like, and it's tremendous,
right,
in comparison to the average person who does well in college and goes to a good school and serves them well. It really changed your life. And I think that's what has driven you into public service versus the rest of us just talk about how good education is for our kids. So go ahead, King. I just kind of wanted to point
that out. Yeah, and you set that up well. I appreciate that. And the, you know, we grinded to get through. And a big part of why I know I grinded is because I wasted 12 years, I'll say 11 and a half years of high school, that could have set me up really well for the academy had I done everything I was supposed to do. But I look at it in my life, and dreams have come true. I mean, I have a dream job. I went to my dream school. I played my dream sport at a high level. Just everything that I wanted took place, and I find myself, it makes it challenging when I look towards what is possible and things that organizations and communities and even our district is capable of doing. Because sometimes when you're the only one in the room, and I don't want to speak for everybody, but when you feel like you're the only one in the room that has experienced dreams on that level and wanted so bad for others, it's hard to get everybody, kind of like you said, it's unfathomable for other people to realize that you're born to a single mother in the projects. Your father wasn't around, you know what I mean? Your mother fought and scratched to get out of that situation. My father has been in jail for more than half of my life, since I was about 18 years old, I guess. He's been in jail that long, you know. And we look at those statistics, and it wasn't even until recently where I looked at myself as, oh, I was supposed to be on the other side of that statistic. I just never thought of myself that way. So, and a lot of that has to do with being in community with brothers like you, Mike Walker, Mickey Dalton, and all the boys we grew up with. You know what I'm saying? It really changed my philosophy on the world and my approach to it. So yeah, when I get to after we graduated the Air Force Academy, well, let me say this real quick. I got an email today from my physics teacher in high school.
Wow.
So let me tell you, I had a 1.97 GPA in high school. I started my 11th grade year with a 1.7. I took physics because at this point I knew I wasn't going to college like I wanted to. But I knew I had to take some classes to build my self-esteem back up. So physics was one of them. And I took calculus and some other stuff, but it wasn't going to take me anywhere. I just said, I got to prove to myself I can do it. Well, my physics teacher was my eighth grade science teacher in middle school. And man, I gave him the blues when we were in middle school. I mean, I spent half my time, my eighth grade year in his class, standing out in the hallway in the principal's office. And I remember telling my superintendents this at our district one time. I did a project in his class. It was on inertia, and after I finished that project, gave a presentation to the class and everything, did the demo, and I looked over at him and he gave me this smile, man, like, is this really the dude that I had 4 years ago in my class? And, you know, I finished up, you know, and that inspired me, man. It really did. And
that's beautiful.
And after I finished that year with like a 3.5 GPA, but it only brought my 1.7 up to a 1.9 GPA. Anyway, he calls me up. Now, we've had coffee in the past, and it's just a really cool connection that I have with someone who has able to see the transformation. But what
right.
the challenge today is people see the Brandt House that is here now and can't imagine where
right.
I've been. So when I ask and suggest the things that we're capable of doing, that's hard to appreciate. You know what I'm saying? And even if
nah, it makes
good,
sense. It's hard to appreciate that your suggestion is coming from a space of relatability to the actual students.
Right.
So yeah, and I that's what I hear you saying. So, you know, they're thinking, you know, you're on this level. Like you said, you lived out your dreams. So they may think your suggestion is not relatable when it's actually the most relatable because you have been in those students' shoes, and specifically the students that every quote unquote district is trying to help, trying to save. Because at the end of the day,
right.
the best students, for the most part, we know they're gonna be okay. We know they're gonna be taken care of. We have to put it into them too. But the concern is always how do we make the district better for all children? And so it sounds like, you know what I'm saying, it's not always received based on how they see you today. You know what I mean? But speaking
exactly.
of actually winning the election and getting on the board, you know, a few years ago, I'm just gonna ask you a very simple question, man, now that you've had the experience, because last time you were vying for the position, what have you learned, man?
Well, I'll tell you this. The role of a board member is, you know, you're the community's representative on the board, on a school district, board of education. And one of our primary roles is we always talk about is hiring the superintendent. We have a superintendent who's been around maybe around 10 years, a little more, I think, and that's a 24/7 job right there. Another part of our job is oversight of the distribution of resources and oversight of operations in line with policy. So I had a lot to learn there. I knew nothing about the policy there, and then. You know, all in all, the community is looking for us to maintain the values of that community. When I joined the board four years ago, the last term, I was working in East St. Louis. To give you a little context to where I live, there's St. Louis, and then if you move east from St. Louis, you cross the Mississippi River into Illinois, and you're right in East St. Louis. And then a couple communities over is where I live in O'Fallon, Illinois. I was doing work in East St. Louis, and I heard a lot of families talking about, hey, we're moving to O'Fallon because they have a great education. Well, I'm like, that's why I moved to O'Fallon. I lived in Japan, moved to this area when I was transferred here with the Air Force. And because of the education, so they were moving there just like out for the same exact reasons. But what I knew was our school, this district, like a lot of districts in this case, are not prepared for the challenges these kids that are kids of need were dealing with
mm-hmm.
in East St. Louis and bringing that to O'Fallon. So I wanted to be a part of that transformation over the last 8 years. We've gone from 9% reduced in free lunch, and that's how you kind of identify your low-income school.
Right,
or not.
Absolutely.
We've gone from 9% to what we are now is right around 24%. So it's more than doubled in 8 years. So,
mm-hmm.
And I can't say that all that's from East St. Louis or whatever, but it is a migration of students. It is an evolving community. And we are dealing with some of those challenges. So the lessons I've learned in that respect is, you know, and it's like any organization. You have different generations. You can have five different generations in an organization. You got kids
mm-hmm.
from baby boomers all the way down to the millennials. You know what I'm saying? And we all have
yep.
different perspectives on how to approach different things, you know. And my grandmother would be, and even my mother right now, she is just appalled at some of the thoughts of how we approach education or just, you know, young people approach life in general. The average kid, you
mm.
know, now will have 9 jobs in his lifetime for a millennial. Our parents
right.
knew about working at Ford for 30 years and then taking that retirement.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So there is that kind of thing where you have, I'll call it our legacy members who have been around for two or more terms in office. And, you know, they have that idea of this is how it works here. This is how we do business. So when I come into an environment like that, that's really challenging to say, well, what about this? How can we do it a better way? You know, a quick example I tell you was, we get for a monthly, what do you call it? Monthly meeting. We would get stacks and stacks of papers, of reports we'd have to read. You know, we get it in the mail maybe a week ahead of time. And I just thought this was so much, but we transitioned to what I requested was if it was possible to transition to electronic meeting, paperless meetings. And the thought was, yeah, we got board members with flip phones. We got board members that, you know, they're not ready for a transition like that. And you know, I continue to push on it. And maybe a year later, we transitioned to that. And now the community is able to communicate with the school better and receive information better. Not just the board, you know what I'm saying? And then it's used for not just our board meetings, but other meetings as well. So, you know, we can't underestimate when we're trying to move forward. We can't allow our ability to underestimate whether it's our facilitators of our operation or those we're facilitating operation for our students. You know, we can't allow our ability to underestimate their capabilities to keep us from moving forward. And we've done some really good things, but I would say that would be one of the biggest lessons learned coming in is just trying to learn the business and learning where everybody is, you know, as far as this is how.
That makes sense. Let's dig in just a little bit. Again, it's just, you know, again, being able to watch what you do and pay attention to. For what I understand, I don't know if y'all are still faced with this, but I know at one point over the last 4 years, y'all were, in a sense, faced with a teacher shortage. If you could just kind of speak to that, because I can only imagine. Again, I don't know if that's something that's still an issue for you, but at the same time, that's something that I know a lot of people around the country deal with in their school systems. And that's part of the reason, you know, again, why I want to do this show is, you know, this stuff can be relatable. It's not just to what's happening in O'Fallon, if that makes sense, because that's, again, that's kind of an issue that I see throughout a lot of districts. So if you could just kind of speak to, you know, kind of some of the issues y'all have had with that and your role and, you know, just being able to assist, you know, just with how people view how we're going to handle that.
Yeah, and I will tell you, you know, our district has received very well the push and the challenge of having a more diverse teaching staff that represents our minority students. We're about 18% black at O'Fallon. And then we probably have about 3% teaching staff. So they've been receptive to that. It's a challenge to get a teacher, period, much less a minority teacher. You know what I'm saying? So the House of Representatives was working on this a couple years ago. The teacher shortage is significant in Illinois, as it is across the country, but they were working on it specifically, had a task force working on it, and invited some of us to come up and talk about it to see what kind of ideas do we have. And they're talking about in the short term. In the long term, in the long term, we have tests that prevent our students, like about a 25 on the SAT is what it's equivalent to, an entry-level test to get into the teaching here in Illinois. But if you're not scoring a 25, so the question has been, and what we went up to the State House to talk about was, is the expectation that a student will score a 25 where we need our teachers to be? That would be nice if that was the baseline, but could it be lower at 22? So they're working on things like that now. Teacher shortage is still an issue, and I have the mind that it will continue to be an issue. One of the things, and I've continued to say with our board, how do we address this? How do we show kids why you're inspired, why you were inspired to get into education, talking about our teachers. How do we get a how do we mentor our students and direct them that way? Because I, as you know, as a pilot, we have a pilot shortage as well, and I see those as two parallel issues that are going to have the same problem in the aviation industry. What you're going to find yourself doing is, hey, how can we fly a plane with one less pilot? And now, because we're not filling the pipeline of all those that will be retiring in the next 20 years or so, teaching is the same way. How can we teach a class with less teachers? And then a district has to, not a district, I think the education as a whole has to ask itself, do we invest in filling the pipeline of teachers? Or do we invest
in
technology that supports the lack of teachers and a technology? And what does that mean? So now we have classrooms that somebody in Bloomington, Illinois, is teaching classes down here in O'Fallon, Illinois.
Yeah, that scares me. Like I think I'm comfortable with our technology level. Figuring out how to fly a plane with less pilots. But I would tell you, if we go that route in education, that scares the hell out of me. Just to be very fair with you. Again, I'm cool with the airline industry figuring out that way, but I don't think I like
education. Well, most people are the other way. Most people want two pilots at the same time, but and I think pilots and teachers want the maximum number of teachers in the classroom. But I wonder, I'm in a union now for the first time since I was 16, working at a bakery. I'm in a union paying dues now, and what I see, and this might be sacrilegious to say, we do so much focus on in union speak talking about how you impact me today versus addressing the challenges that are coming over the horizon, who's going to replace me tomorrow, and I would like to see more effort in those ways. And there are a lot of efforts going on, but I think it has to be, we got to ramp it up and get a lot more people dug in on that kind of, how do we fill the pipeline of teachers that we need? Because we need teachers today, and then we got to figure out how we're doing it tomorrow. And one of my suggestions, talking to a congressman, one of our state congresswomen in Springfield, one of the things I talked about was how do we pull people from industry in? Because we really focus a lot on getting kids right out of high school, right out of college, coming into the teaching profession. Mm-hmm. But what about those people who love what they do? And I'll give you an example that we talked about is, what if we had almost like a National Guard concept? You don't do teaching full time, but you come in and out when the need arises, or you get a 2-year break from your profession. For example, we have Boeing out here. What if one of the engineers at Boeing wanted to teach math for 2 years? Well, you could have a skeleton crew at the school, kind of like you do at a National Guard base. You got guys that work there full time, but 70% of the force or 50% of the force is coming in part time. And maybe you have that with Boeing. You have a skeleton crew at my high school. And then you bring in these folks who are coming for 2 years, mm-hmm. and they're getting a break from their profession. They are coming. They're doing something that they're inspired to do. They're doing something that they can relate real life experience to. And then they go back more energized. The Air Force had a program like that where you go work in industry and then you come back to the Air Force.
Right.
And we, we've had some friends that have done that. Jay Rohn, I think, might have done something like that. But we have to be, if we're not going to address the issue of how do we fill the pipeline, we got to come up with creative ways of how do we keep these students
If I can, King, I love the idea of it for several reasons. If if somehow we can get away from, in a sense, the restrictive nature of testing is all that we teach, I love that idea because, again, as you said, not only are – and it's definitely people in those industries who would love that break per se, you know what I mean, and, you know,
right.
an opportunity to give back to the community. But the other aspect is the idea that you have with the people that are actually in the industry. Can you imagine what they're going to bring to the table in the classroom as far as making what they're teaching the child relatable to their possible future if that child has that interest, you know what I mean, versus
right.
even a great teacher, and again, nothing's like a great teacher, so let me not even say a great teacher, but versus, you know, getting that student out of college who's, you know, teaching that with no life experience
right.
because they've been a teacher all their lives. So I love that aspect because it makes them more pliable, you know, for the future. And the other thing is we already see, because the business world is always, in a sense, ahead of education, the business world is long been doing that, where they've gotten away from, you know, did you go to this school? Did you have this certification? Oh, you got a resume that shows you've been doing the work because you had this interest for, you know, for the last 5 years of your life. We'll give you a shot. So, you know,
right,
we're watching
right.
business do that and get away from structure. Like, and this is kind of relating back to that idea that you mentioned earlier, that when you went to the state to say, hey, do we got to have a 25? Like, we've created these standards that are not necessarily pliable to the future for these students.
Right.
So that opportunity sounds, you know, incredible. Let me definitely, again, kind of take us in a different direction. Again, I want to take advantage of, I got you on for another about 15 minutes here. And so something that I wanted to speak to, and it's in particular, and this is something I wanted to kind of ask about, I definitely remember, watching you from afar, I definitely remember there was a time while you were on this board that you ended up having to stand up, in a sense, for something that kind of happened, in a sense, controversial. Y'all were, from what I understand, removing or possibly considering removing a favorable coach based on, based on some things that were inappropriate. And again, I don't want to get into specifics of that.
Right,
but I have
right.
to tell you, I don't know. I think I may have called you the time to say I applaud you for being the stand-up guy I've always knew that you were. Because the way I saw you stand up, King, was for those students. And you were saying, hey, the board doesn't meet this standard. How can we ask it of these children? So, again, if you could just kind of speak to that, because here's my other question. You know, not only did that happen, but I wonder, now that you're up for reelection, sometimes when people stand up like that, they almost become a target for doing the right thing. So I don't know if you're facing a little
right.
bit of that, but again, that's a question that I have, knowing that you did that, you know, maybe a year or two ago, and now that you're coming up for re-election, sometimes you don't make friends when you do the right thing, if that makes sense. Go ahead.
Yeah, and, you know, I was telling someone today who reached out to me from some of my advertisements, from my campaigning, and they had reached out during that time as well, and has, you know, provided some encouraging words. And, you know, what I like about a boardroom is you should be able to hash things out, even if it comes to battling it out, you know, and letting everybody get their input out on the table. And we did. The challenges for me, I'm looking at the comparison or juxtaposition of how we handle student discipline versus how we handle teacher discipline or a staff member discipline. And I didn't think it was consistent. And the only difference I could see is that this person was covered by a union. This person was an adult. This person mm-hmm. had been around for years, you know, versus the students that come in who, like my mother, they bring their mother with them for expulsion hearings. And, you know, the student comes in and he has a first-time offense. And we look at him and say, he doesn't appreciate this opportunity. And so, then we expel them for whatever the length of time we do. And I just think,
mm-hmm.
You know, there was no comparison there. And it didn't seem right. It was interesting how we use one philosophy where, because I was saying the kids needed to see the kids that this staff member was coaching the kids needed to see him be accountable for his actions. And others would say, we don't need to hurt the kids by his actions. And I thought that was really interesting. I mean, it's a very, in my point of view, it's a very short-sighted point of view just to look at, you know, the pending championship coming up versus the life of you're going to have to live expecting to get not be held accountable because your coach didn't get held accountable. You know what I mean? And you know, my comment that you probably read on Facebook was, do our kids have to unionize to get a second chance? And, you know, the union is, this will be the only specific point I'll make, but the union in that case said, you know, if you fire this guy, we're going to hold you up in appeals, and it's going to cost a lot of money, and it's going to take from the kids and this, that, and the other. And I'm like, so why is it on me to feel like or to be held accountable for taking this money from the kids for something that we know was wrong by this staff member? Why wouldn't it be on the union to be accountable for taking money from those kids? Why would they want to cover somebody or support somebody who does not represent what they I know they represent? But anyway, so that was a tough time, and I got some encouraging words from folks that helped me believe that I was saying the right thing. But and that's the thing about being on the board, man. Everybody is coming from different perspectives, and you know, I'm one of those people. I grow impatient with when we're not completing, when things aren't going the way I know they could be or expect them to be sometimes. Mm-hmm. And that's something I've had to learn for myself. Is, you know, everybody don't move at the pace I might move, and everybody grows at different rates. I will tell you this: over the 4 years, my superintendent and I, and even her assistant superintendent, we've had a lot of personal conversations. Not personal, I should say, one-on-one conversations, and they've been personal too. We've had battles in the middle of our meetings together, you know, just disagreements and things like that, and things we agree on. For example, district consolidation. I won't get into the details of that, but and the reason why that would be good. But there's things that we disagree on as well. But you know, part of why I felt like it was important to bring, or what I could bring to the board was going to be good, would be perspective from my experience. And when I talked to, I'll just give you one example. You know, the movie 13th that came out, and you've seen it. I think you talked about it on your show. I don't recall.
No, I haven't seen it yet. Actually, to be fair to you, I haven't seen it yet.
I thought we did talk about it, and you said you hadn't seen it yet. And but anyway, I had her watch the movie 13th. Talking is the movie about 13th Amendment, very highly acclaimed. And she watched it, and it talked about the, you know, just kind of forces on young black men coming up in America. And she watched it, and the very next day she said to me, I had no idea. One of her comments was, you know, I wish I had known this 20 years ago. And that just lets you know, it just illustrates everybody is not where you are. Even if she could have seen it and we still disagree on some of the same stuff, you know, that movie I felt like was enlightening about, but that's because everybody is where they are, man. And I think that's a good point.
Yeah. If I can just reiterate, because I want to make sure what you're saying is very clear for anybody out there listening, and I do that sometimes, you know, at the end of the day, what you're pointing out is some of your battles that you were having prior to her getting a new perspective were probably very different than her getting this, you know, new perspective. And like you said, there still continue to be areas of difference again, but part of that's because that information was new, you know, not being exposed to the very unfortunate systematic attempt to, you know, in a sense, do what is, you know, what's been done to our community and how much it plays a role in education. And the reality is what you're finding by moving on into this, you know, into this public service position and wanting to play your role and give your perspective, I'm pretty sure what you're finding is how not only her, again, that's somebody you know, she openly told you that, but for a long time, there's been a lot of people throughout the country who made a lot of decisions without being aware of this other very realistic perspective for what's happening,
yeah,
particularly to the African American community. So they've been making these decisions without even realizing this, you know, to a certain extent, to the extent that this has been going on. So that's why it's important to ensure, in my opinion, if I can say this, to make sure that these different, your, you know, perspective like yours is a part of these, you know, of these type of boards, specifically when you talk about just the change that's happening in the community with, as you said, again, you know, I don't know if you remember, but I worked in minority enrollment over at the academy, so I definitely
right.
understand how the schools are judged based on free lunch and, you know, reduced lunch and things
oh,
of that
right.
nature.
Yeah.
And, you know, all of those things are very specific demographics to how you're going to look at that school. So it is always a benefit, in my opinion, to diversify school boards as well as teachers to assist any of those changing demographics, because that's the reality of America. The browning of America is a very real thing, and so I appreciate you in there making the good fight, if I can just say that to you, you know, personally. So, you know, absolutely. But I definitely, you know, definitely know you're, you know, you're one of those people that's going to lean right versus what's, as you know, as Martin Luther King said, you know, not what's politically correct, you know, not what's expedient, you know, just leaning towards what's right. And again,
right.
with the consideration that that's what is, in a sense, I think if you tell me if I'm wrong, but that's what you feel like your job and commitment to the students is the more that y'all do right, the more they'll benefit. I think that's kind of your perspective. But I'll ask you this in these last few minutes is, you know, again, like you said, you're trying to be respectful of people, you know, in a sense, getting the position for different reasons. But I can only imagine because of the politics of it, sometimes there are people who lose sight of the actual reason why y'all are there because things have become so political. That's the unfortunate mix of education and politics that doesn't always benefit the students, in my opinion, if I could throw that out. But I want to hear your take on that in these last few minutes.
And you know, I'm one of those. I don't necessarily get into the politics. I've always kind of been my own lone ranger kind of thing I think avoid that. But, you know, I will say it was suggested to me. I'm the chair of our Achievement Gap Committee that our superintendent presented as an idea to the board. So that's been running for about 3 years now. And not too long ago, a couple members associated with the board, a couple folks associated with the board, had suggested to me that I run for another district. Our district is 9 through 12, and there's another district, K through 8. So that would be our feeder district. They suggested I run for the K through 8 district, and because I had done so much with our influencing our achievement gap or the school's actions with our achievement gap committee. And you know, maybe that was politics. Maybe that was, you know, I appreciate the compliment, pregnant
mm-hmm.
pause right there. You know what I'm saying?
maybe
there was something else associated with that, too. I don't have time to look at that, but I know if you see the benefit that I bring to the board as just the Achievement Gap Committee, then you're not seeing all the benefit that I think, you know, as you said, having a diverse board, having a new fresh member that says, you know, is not thinking or brings a different frame of thought to the different challenges that we have. I asked a question recently. Our football team hadn't been doing really well this past year and getting a lot of comments.
You got about a minute to
things.
Wrap this up, so I just want
okay.
you to know that. You got the last minute, though. Go ahead, King.
And I was just saying, I was like, do we consider winning when we evaluate our coaches and things like that? And somebody said, we've never had that question before. Well, that's just the different perspective that comes to the board when you allow fresh, different thoughts, and that is needed, and I hope to continue to do that with Cecil doing a lot of good things, and we still have a long way to go. And it is not just I think in newer areas that we have the ability to cover. So, hey, man, I appreciate this time together.
Absolutely.
It's always good hanging out with
absolutely. Absolutely, man. Appreciate you. Good luck in your reelection for the District 203 Board of Education of O'Fallon. Definitely, I support you as a friend, obviously, but good luck with that, King. Thanks a lot for coming on for the pop-up show. We'll catch you another time. You know, we always invite you on when we need you.
All right, we'll see you, man. Good luck to you. God bless.
Yeah, good luck to you as well, King. Take care.